Welcome to the Grand Cast. This is Season 2, Episode 1, the season premiere. Today is Friday, March 31st, the last day of the month. My guest today, still light out, today is Will Altman.
That's me.
Thank you so much for being here, Will.
Yeah, you bet.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too.
Season 2.
It's nice and warm in here.
It's quite toasty. It's 69 in the window.
Yeah.
Inside, it's much warmer, I believe.
Oh, I believe you.
This feels, say, like 84.
Yeah, I have a pretty good internal thermometer, and I would say that's accurate.
I wonder if people born in America naturally have internal Fahrenheit sensors.
Yeah. Definitely not Celsius.
What if you're born Celsius and you learn Fahrenheit?
I'm not sure if that's scientifically sound.
Hmm.
But you never know. Are you a metric person?
I'd like to be.
I would too.
I have ambitions of converting someday.
12.5 millimeters equals 1/2 inch.
Oh. That's good to know.
Just 6 millimeters is 1/4 inch. Right about, in case you were wondering.
I'll take note. All right, so I like to start out each episode going over the mission statement and the goals for the Grand Cast.
Mm-hmm.
They've been stabilized, haven't been changing. As we're getting into season 2, I might revise them a little bit. But the mission statement is... The purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. And the goals are, there's two goals. First one is to post one new episode weekly, which I've been achieving for 11 weeks so far.
Wow. Yeah. So you've had 11 different guests talking to this microphone?
12, actually.
12?
Because... I recorded Erin Betka last week, but her episode doesn't come out till Sunday.
Wow.
Because I've got one backup one in case I have to miss a week.
I feel honored to be so close to this microphone with my mouth.
The second goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content, which I think we'll do in short order here.
Is that person Josh Heller?
He is... probably the first of the persons who will have a better day as a result.
He's a cool guy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Josh Heller. He's my booking agent, actually, for the show.
Really?
Yeah. He takes care of all that. So
yeah, he was very cordial when we communicated before this.
Well organized and...
I would give him a solid 8 out of 10.
That's great.
It's a pretty good grade.
Yeah. He's not in any danger of being canceled.
Good.
So with this being the season premiere of the Grand Cast Season 2, normally we'd get right into the interview, but I have a short statement regarding the season premiere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's officially springtime here in Michigan. Winter's finally ended. Spring and springtime refer to the season and also to ideas of rebirth, rejuvenation, renewal, resurrection, and regrowth, commonly referred to as the 5 R's of spring. Spring is very popular with pirates.
With pirates?
Because 5 R's.
Oh, yeah, I get it now.
Yeah.
That was clever.
Thank you. I do all the writing. Haven't gotten an intern for that yet. There is, I should mention, Robert, the intern, who's here, started. Last week was his first week. He's doing some of the technical production for the show.
For those of you who are listening, there's no one else at this table. Are you okay?
Yeah.
All right. Just checking.
Yep. I'm looking to get a second intern also.
Oh, okay. A person would help.
Yeah. Free labor and all that.
Well, yeah.
All right, so for the interview, let's get started.
Okay.
First question, what is your favorite color?
Growing up, it was green, but when I would say in 2013, it changed to a bright orange. It's just an estimate.
And it remains bright orange?
Yeah, like kind of close to safety cone orange.
Okay.
Yeah.
High visibility.
It's like, caution, you're my favorite color.
Was it a rapid transition or like a gradual?
I think it was gradual. It was probably as I was... I feel like I owe it to the Danish culture for some reason. I don't know why, but something about bright orange and maybe architecture, design. Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. You have produced some of the most creative and enjoyable performances that I've seen at Dog Story. Some of my favorites have been the wind-up hamster balls.
Oh, yeah.
The Easter Bunny at Rivertown Mall sketch, and the puppet knife thrower. Where do you find inspiration for your sketches or performances?
Sure. I would say I owe some of that just to Aaron Betka asking me to perform at Calm. And I'm like, well, I don't do solo improv stuff, really. So I have to come up with a new act that no one's ever seen before. Sometimes it's inspired through a costume piece that I acquire, or it could just be a random idea. Like, hey, I bought electric hamster on Amazon, and what if I bought 13 of them? And then what can I do with those? So, for me, I guess I don't consider myself a prop comic. Maybe some people do, but a lot of my ideas start with props and evolve from there.
Is Amazon like your primary source of props, or do you have like local spots that get unique?
Tasha, my wife, and I go to a lot of estate sales.
Okay.
So, you know, Saturday morning we'll maybe hit 10 estate sales and map them out so we don't have to double back. And we'll just acquire things that are interesting to us. And sometimes they come into a show and sometimes they sit on a shelf.
If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you like to be?
Growing up, I was into herpetology. I had like a lot of amphibians and lizards and reptile snakes. So I guess I might be a bullfrog.
Bullfrog?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Or a toad. Maybe a toad. Because I like water, but I don't like water that much.
Don't want to be bound to it?
Yeah. So a toad, you can kind of hop around land. Kind of got a bumpy back. That's kind of cool.
More texture.
Yeah, kind of blends in.
Yeah.
But yeah, growing up I had, at one point, I think like 9 fish tanks in our living room.
Oh, wow.
With various lizards and such. I had a bullfrog named JP after Jurassic Park.
Okay.
He was very big. And then I caught a bullfrog at a pond, brought it home, and I named it Pond. And it was kind of small. And then I acquired one more bullfrog that was not quite as big as JP, so I called it Medium. So I had Pond, Medium, and JP. And JP lived for 13 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
What'd you feed it?
Crickets, and occasionally I would try to feed it live goldfish. But it would just end up jumping on the goldfish and killing them.
Oh.
And it wouldn't eat them. It would just stomp on them.
Hmm. It's one of those tough lessons you learn as a kid.
Yeah. But I raised JP from a tadpole that I got when I was 3. So a lot of that was on my mom. Yeah. But, it was my childhood companion. I didn't have a dog.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. All right, so I have a let's talk about with let's start with rapid delivery improv.
Sure. Yeah, that's the improv troupe, resident troupe of the Civic Theater. I started there doing improv classes, level 1 and 2, with Bart Sumner. And then I was asked to join the team, and I've been doing that ever since. And it's short-form improv games. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I just saw you guys on Wednesday. It's a very good show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, our next RDI show is April 12th. At the Dog Story at 7:30 p.m. Just a few weeks away, or yeah, a week away, whenever you air this.
This will be next Sunday, so that's okay. The 9th?
Okay, I think. So it'll be pretty close.
Yeah, good timing. And those shows are $10.
Yeah.
Start at 7:30 p.m.
7:30. Yep. Dog Story Theater.
Are you doing if you have a group of 5 or more, there's a 20% discount?
Yep, that's the new rule, yeah. New discount code. Trying to compete with Groupon, it's tough.
And does Rapid Delivery always do the short form, like variety kind of?
Yeah, most short form. We've dabbled in long form stuff. But yeah, typically short form. Game shows, parodies, musical improv, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the singing end to the show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, was it like radio?
Radio Dial, radio call dial. It.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're actually, July 8th, we're doing a special show on a Saturday, many months away, but it's going to be all musical-themed short-form games, and I'm bringing a performer from Cleveland to play piano to behind all of us as we perform.
Nice. I'll look forward to that. Another group that you're in with the Dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I brought my whole bag of With the Dark sound effects. You can kind of hear some of them. With the Dark is... It started out doing Tuesday night rehearsals at my house with just a couple people, and it kind of grew from there. Essentially, we do kind of like this, a radio show. We turn off the lights in the theater, and we improvise a story based on an audience suggestion or maybe a randomly selected paragraph from a book. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the show probably a handful of times, and every time it's... always a great experience. Like having the lights go off is such a strong transition, and it really keeps people like connected to the show, it feels like, because they just have that one sense of what's going on, mm-hmm. and they have to focus on it. There's no visual distractions, and
yeah,
I really enjoy that aspect of it.
That's kind of unique.
Yeah.
We've been working on our branding. I think today we unveiled a new logo that one of our team members, Lisa, designed. So, trying to be a little more legit.
Yeah, I saw that on the Facebook, like the half-lit faces.
Yeah.
The other half in With the Dark.
With the Dark, yeah.
Yep. Oh, is that kind of like the opposite of miming, where miming's all visual and no audio?
Yeah, sure. I'll go with that metaphor.
Like an oral mime?
Yeah. Stuck in a box in your head.
Do you record the audio for those shows?
Yeah, I believe, I don't personally, we've recorded our rehearsals, and Sean has recorded... various performances. I think someday, maybe if we get our act together, we'll do a podcast or something, or at least have some record of things we've said.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yet another group that you're in, The Last Retort.
Yeah.
That's mostly, or is it all sketch, like recorded?
Yeah, it's sketch, and a lot of it is improvised. based around a theme or a, you know, a bit of an idea. So yeah, I don't remember what year we started. I think we've been going maybe a year and a half, or that's a rough estimate, but Amy Gaskin and I started that, and we've just been putting out as much content as we can, trying to be funny.
And those get broadcast on GRTV, is that?
Yeah, we've put together several episodes that have aired on GRTV, probably at some early hour in the morning. But yeah, but mostly it's Facebook videos and trying to promote it as much as we can there.
I just watched the makeup one that came out today.
Oh yeah.
That was an unexpected turn. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was, I was eating the makeup and it was disgusting.
It was like actual real.
Real makeup.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I chewed on a stick of lipstick.
You took a big bite of that thing.
Yeah, it was a big bite and it coated the inside of my mouth and it was really tough to get out. I had to take a paper towel and just stick the paper towel in my mouth and wipe it out. I don't recommend it.
Oh, that is dedication.
Yeah, it's dedication to the art.
What's it like producing comedy for television?
I mean, to be honest, we took all of the sketches that we had filmed and put online and just compiled them into a 23-minute episode and stitched it together. So we didn't create the material with the intent of putting it on TV, but I think we made it work. Yeah.
How is it different from live comedy?
I guess the part that I enjoy is I do a lot of the editing, the video editing, and really picked up a lot of skills doing that. I can walk away from a shoot that we've done kind of thinking, oh, that was okay. You know, maybe there's something funny. Maybe I don't have the best feeling about it. But then when I get to the editing portion, I'm like, all right, now I can cherry pick the best moments and stitch it all together. And maybe if I wasn't feeling that it was going to be that great, I can usually make it something of it. That's not every time. Sometimes we shoot it and we're like, dang, that was funny. Yeah. But that's not for me to decide. That's for you.
Do you usually do like multiple takes and then take from those, or is it it's like one and done?
Just yeah, depends. It depends, and depends on our schedule too, because
yeah.
We might try to film something super quick before a different show.
Do you prefer producing live or recorded entertainment?
That's a good question. I mean, I enjoy both for different reasons. The recorded stuff, we've been promoting it, The Last Retort, we've been promoting it overseas. So when we'll do Facebook promotion, boosting posts and things like that. And we'll send it to other English speaking countries. Like we'll send it to Canada and the UK, occasionally Australia. And, it's kind of fun to see when a video gets picked up over there and we'll be getting random comments from different cultures, and it's kind of fun.
Huh.
So that's something I don't get when I, you know, perform on a stage, but...
yeah, especially in Grand Rapids.
Right. But there's nothing beats live performances and hearing the audience laugh and feeding off of that.
Thank you. If I were going to start a traveling circus, what would some good names for it be?
Do you have any skills in the circus arts?
No.
Well, I guess if I were to suggest names, just looking at you, and things in your room, I'm seeing video games. You have a table lamp that has dimples like a golf ball on it. It looks very aerodynamic. So maybe from that I can infer that you would be aerodynamic yourself.
Reasonably, yeah.
Are you afraid of heights?
Yes. Well, maybe not of heights, but of falling. But is that the same thing?
How do you feel about body piercings?
Strongly against.
Okay. Do you have any parts of your body that are like removable? Like an example, I know this guy called the Terminator, and he can pop out his eyeball. It's a glass eye.
Oh.
Do you have a glass eye?
No. I could probably remove other things, but I would prefer not to. Like, they're not reattachable.
Sure. That's understandable.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying you don't have a lot going for you. But I would try to, if you want people to come, I would maybe call it like a super exciting circus or you're going to see something really incredible here, but I just can't tell you what that is until you buy a ticket. And then you can do your thing on stage and it doesn't matter at that point because
you didn't bought it.
Yeah, you didn't promise them anything.
So use maybe like buzzwords, but
vague generalities.
Okay.
But yeah, you should totally try it.
Put together a troupe.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best gift that you have ever received?
Best gift. I don't think this is the best, but this is the first one that popped into my head. When I was a kid, my dad got me a Lego space shuttle set.
Ooh.
And that was pretty baller.
Was it the one with like the green neon plastic parts?
Yeah.
Translucent.
I had that one too. It was like a space station, maybe.
I don't remember that one.
I think the space shuttle had like a roof that opened up and maybe had a satellite in there.
Ooh. Like an actual like space shuttle? Like the
space shuttle. I don't know, you know, which one it was.
One of the NASA ones?
Yeah.
Nice. Do you like outer space in general?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I do. Occasionally we'll go to the Robert C. Veen Observatory in Lowell. They have public nights once a month at the observatory there. During certain months, not all year, but my wife and I frequent that. It's really fun stargazing, and it's only like 20 minutes from Grand Rapids.
Yeah, without the light pollution, or most of the light pollution.
Yeah.
Did you see the SpaceX launching and retrieving their reused rocket this week?
Yeah, I did. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Elon Musk is incredible. Like, his aspirations.
I mean, they spend like, what, billions and billions of dollars on that stuff for like a single use?
Yeah, so I think now SpaceX is doing it for $50 million per launch, and with the reused ones, it's going to be 30% cheaper, so $35 million instead of $50.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and the closest competitors are at like $100
million. Wow.
So it's...
That's staggering, yeah.
Yeah. Exciting times.
Can you imagine if like a disposable razor was $35 or $50 million?
I would stop shaving.
I would too.
Well, I did a while ago. I just got a beard trimmer. That's basically reusable. Yep.
It's basically like a SpaceX rocket.
My face?
No. Oh. Well, maybe. I was thinking the razor.
That's probably a better analogy.
Yeah. Or the electric razor. Is the SpaceX rocket.
Yeah.
And the disposable one is like a Russian spacecraft.
Yeah.
Soyuz.
I don't know how to say it.
Soy sauce.
The soy sauce rocket.
Yeah.
Which is still launching. I mean, they've worked for decades.
It's a cool design.
Yeah. You work fantastically well with Amy Gaskin. Could you please offer some tips for working with a partner?
Communication. I guess you gotta... We seem to text ideas, bounce ideas off each other, and just using the basic tenets of improv of yes-anding the other idea. Just constantly building on ideas that each of us has. That seems to work well for us.
So maintaining good lines of communication.
Yeah. We, I guess, mutual respect for each other's comedic abilities.
Is it important to have similar goals?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Could you please describe your creative process? Like, what goes into making one of your performances?
Well, I guess I used to keep a sticky pad note pad at the side of my bed stand, and at night I would roll over and write down a joke or whatever. And similar, now I just have replaced the sticky pad with my phone.
Yep.
And now that I'm married, I get to wake Tasha up and ask if it's funny or a good idea, which is not always the best time to test material late at night when she's trying to go to bed. So yeah, ideas sometimes strike me right when I wake up. I've heard that's a creative time for your day. I don't know what it is, if my inhibitions are lower or what, but I just wake up from sleep and something pops in my head and write it down. Can't stress that enough, is write it down. And even in improv or street performing, you know, when you accidentally say something funny, write it down so you don't forget the joke that you said. Otherwise, you're not... That's how you build an act, is just accumulating all the funny stuff that you've tested in front of people. And then just implementing it. I don't wait till things are perfect before I perform them, I guess. And maybe that comes from all my background with street performing, but it's just getting it out there, testing material, seeing if people like it, and refining it if it needs it. That's what's great about Calm, is that it happens on such a regular basis that you can throw something up. And oftentimes, things that I performed at Calm will make it into some other show that I'm doing.
It's a good testing ground.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. In software development, there's a system, the Agile development, which is getting like a minimum product out there just so that people start using it, and then iterating based on what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's inspired by improv at all.
By day, I'm a industrial designer, product designer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it's a similar process that I use there, just iterating on ideas and, you know, putting something down on paper and then putting it in front of people and getting their feedback and making it better.
What sorts of things do you design?
I work for a design firm in Ada called 2B Studio, and it's a design consultancy. And really, we can design anything, but I find myself designing a lot of furniture just in the area that we're in.
Yeah.
And before that, I worked for Rubbermaid, or Newell Brands is what they call it now. And for them, I designed stuff for Papermate pens and Sharpie markers and Expo. And I also did some stuff on Rubbermaid commercial products, designing stuff for custodians, carts that you might see pushed around an airport or something like that.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about Grand Rapids Comedy Tours.
It's another endeavor that Amy and I work on. It's a comedic tours of Grand Rapids. We charter a bus, sell tickets, and drive people around for about an hour, hour and 15 minutes around Grand Rapids. You'll see sketch, improv, characters show up. It's a lot of fun.
Is that like a monthly or quarterly?
Right now it's more like quarterly. So if you see one pop up, if you want to go, you should probably go unless you want to wait till the next quarter. Mm-hmm. It would be great if we did them more frequently. It's a lot of planning. And at the moment, the bus is kind of expensive to rent, so we're not really... We're usually about to break even, so it's more of a labor of love at the moment. Mm. But it would be fun to see it turn into a viable business.
Is it a like a party bus? Like, can you bring booze on it?
Yeah, it's bring your own beer. Our tours thus far have started at Vandermill, mm-hmm. Over on Ball, and so people can purchase cider and stuff at Vandermill and then bring it on the bus.
Convenient. Do tickets have to be purchased in advance?
You can buy them the day of. The very first tour we did, we sold out and had to turn a number of people away at the door. So it was kind of sad doing that. So we recommend getting them in advance if you see that we're selling tickets.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to do that on the next one. Is there a planned date yet? Or
We don't have a date at the moment. But we have a website, grcomedytours.com.
And a Facebook?
And a Facebook, yep. GR Comedy Tours on Facebook. So you can like our Facebook page, and then I'm sure you'll get a notification next time.
Nice. You're involved in so many projects. Do you have any tips for working on several things in parallel?
Keep a good calendar of events so that you don't forget what you signed up for. That's probably my biggest tip. Tasha, my wife, reminds me a lot. So have an accountability partner.
Yeah.
That helps. People know that I'm a juggler, and they probably make some joke about juggling responsibilities, but I'm not going to do that.
The analogy that I think of is the performance of spinning plates on a stick.
Oh, sure.
And they'll start to wobble, and you'll have to go back and mm-hmm. spin it some more.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And actually, my boss at my day job uses a similar analogy, working in a consultancy, kind of have a light touch across all of our clients. Keep it going.
What are some of your favorite comedic movies?
Growing up, I'd watch a lot of Marx Brothers and Three Stooges, Pink Panther movies, Abbott and Costello. I mean, really anything in that vicinity is kind of my bag.
So quite a bit of like the physical comedy.
Yeah, heavily physical comedy stuff.
You don't see too much of that in improv.
No, I don't think so. Well, I mean, there's space work, which...
like the physical interaction.
Right. Improv came to me later in life. Like, before that, I was doing performing for a long time before I discovered that.
It's a relatively recent development?
Yeah, probably 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've been performing since I was in fourth grade. So
Was stand-up before or after improv for you?
Stand-up was before. And I've done very little stand-up. But the whole circus juggling stuff, that was a lot of my life.
At what age did you start?
I want to say it was like seven or eight. Yeah, when I started doing juggling, actually started doing magic first. A friend of mine in fourth grade, Sam Bookbinder, he gave me a magic kit that his uncle, who was a magician, used. Hmm. And it had some tricks in there, so I started doing those tricks. Then I branded myself. I was Chilly Willy, the amazing conjurer and juggler extraordinaire. My mom would drive me around town, dropping me off at events to perform, and then would pick me up after.
Hmm. So you've had a passion for performance art pretty much forever.
Yeah. Yeah, over 20 years.
Nice. You work with local comedian of note, Mr. Paul Brand. That yeah. must be fascinating.
Yeah, He has an amazing mind. He's really funny.
Could you please tell me a story about Paul?
Sure. The first Paul story that comes to mind was actually on our very first Last Retort video shoot. Paul came along. This was one of our videos. It's like a medieval-themed video, which you can see on our page somewhere. And we were shooting about 45 minutes up north on a farm that a friend of ours, Lisa Ambrose, let us shoot there. And she has a fenced-in donkey pen. And we were just walking back after shooting, the whole crew and Paul. And Paul looks at the fence, and then he goes and touches the fence. And I think when he first touched it, nothing happened. But then I think he goes back for another touch, and he gets put on his butt. It was electric. It was the fence would cycle the electricity, so it was on all the time. So I think he got lucky, and then it got him.
Mm.
But he was okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What is the sound of one hand clapping?
Could you hear it? I don't know.
Yeah.
It was like a faint clap if you couldn't hear it.
Thank you. How did you first get started performing comedy?
Going back to the fourth grade thing, I've always considered myself a comedy juggler, and if you've ever seen my juggling act, it's comedy juggling. So what was the question? When did I first start, or how did I get started? Yeah, my friend Sam Bookbinder, who had given me the magic tricks, also taught me how to juggle three balls. So I owe it to him. I think today he writes crossword puzzles for the New York Times.
Hmm.
Or I don't know if it's exclusively all the time, but I think he's had a few in there.
Interesting.
I'm sure he has another job, but I don't know what that is. Then I went to an overnight camp up in the Wisconsin Dells, and they had a juggling class there. You know, you can do archery, you can do swimming, you can do juggling. I did all three. And so that's when I started to hone my skills. I always mix up home and hone, but I honed them.
Home would make sense too, like you're homing in on
my skill.
The target.
And hone is like to sharpen them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I home and honed them. I did both. Yeah, and then when I got to high school, there was actually a juggling club at my high school, which I was happy. That, to be honest, my mom and I were looking to move to a different place, and I found out that there was a juggling club at this high school, and it just happened to be convenient for my mom because she worked near the high school, so we moved closer to that, and I got to do the juggling club high school, and she got a shorter commute. So it worked out. And then we went to juggling conventions, and the whole world of juggling was vast and amazing. I guess what's driven me to keep going was always having, there's always have been outside influences kind of inspiring me to do more.
What is the most difficult thing that you've juggled?
The trick or the object? Because you could
object
the object. I once juggled live smallmouth bass. we were doing this juggling performance on this promenade in Lake Zurich, Illinois, and there was, after we were done, there was a guy fishing, and he had a bucket of fish and a bucket of water full of fish, and he said, hey you guys, you want to juggle these fish? And I was like, oh sure, why not? So I kind of juggled them like pancakes, and the fins on those fish are very sharp on their back, and they cut my hands up pretty well. And but then we released them and they were okay. So that's probably the strangest thing I've juggled.
It had to be quite the sight.
Yeah.
Who are some of your role models?
Like people that I know or people that I admire, or doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, I like Dick Van Dyke. His physicality, he can dance, he can sing, he can be funny. You know, I look at him even today and he's still pretty light on his feet, and I can only hope that when I'm that age that I can be as spry. Yeah, Dick Van Dyke's kind of my hero. For my last birthday, I actually got a signed picture of him. So that's on our wall now.
Nice. Any other role models?
I've had I had a juggling mentor in high school. He was kind of our juggling coach. A friend and I, or four friends, we started a group called Team Entropy, a juggling team. Then two of them moved on, and two of us continued. And we would compete in juggling competitions. Every year they have international juggling championships. And my friend Tony Gonzalez and I competed as Team Entropy in the international championships for, I think, about five years in a row. And finally we took third place. But we were under the mentorship of a pretty well-known juggler, Mark Fay. And he's been on America's Got Talent doing his shtick. And so, yeah, he was a pretty big influence on our juggling in high school.
Thank you. Are we living in a computer simulation?
Kind of like the Matrix thing?
Something.
I mean, it's always possible. Who knows what Al Gore invented?
You think he would be like the architect if there were one?
I mean, I imagine him being the architect.
Hmm.
Isn't he coming out with another movie? Another
More Inconvenient Truth?
Yeah.
I think they dropped the trailer for that.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched the first one.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little inconvenient. Can't talk about it.
Yeah. One of my favorite comics is a movie theater, like an old-timey kind of movie theater with the ticket booth out front.
Mm-hmm.
And one line says, "An Inconvenient Truth" is the film. The other line is "A Reassuring Lie." And there's a line around the block for "A Reassuring Line" or "A Reassuring Lie." And
yeah,
almost nobody for "An Inconvenient Truth."
That's a good one.
Yeah. It's hard to inflict that sort of mental pain on yourself, but it makes you stronger, I guess.
So yeah, computer simulation, I would say there's probably a 50-50 chance.
Either it is or it isn't. Yeah,
yeah, and I'm okay with either way.
Hmm.
I mean, if the computer overlords are listening right now, if you could give me a few more XP points to apply towards like juggling abilities and being funny, and maybe some extra money, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Your beard is magnificent.
Oh, thanks.
At what age did you first attempt to grow a beard, and how successful were you?
I started to grow facial hair, probably like many boys, in high school, and rather unsuccessfully. I kind of had a goatee for a while, but it wasn't very thick, and you could see my skin through it, you know. So it was pretty dirty. Then, you know, I think I wanted to grow a beard. Okay, well, I guess I'll step you through it. So, yeah, goatee in high school, get to college, still had a goatee, and then I got a mustache. Then I was kind of experimenting with my mustache a bit, and I shaved half of it off. And at that point, I was in a fraternity, Pi Kappa Phi.
Like left or right half, or like top and bottom half?
Left. I think I shaved off the left half. So okay. From my nose over was gone. And at the frat house, I don't know if I gave myself the nickname or if it was given to me, but I was just called Half Stash.
Hmm.
So I was a Half Stash for a long time. And that's actually when I met my future wife, when I had the Half Stash. So she was a keeper. Then I was living in Chicago at that point. Then I moved to Grand Rapids and got a job working at the Grand Rapids Police Department. And at that point, half stashes weren't acceptable. So I had to grow a full mustache at that point. But they wouldn't allow any other facial hair. So you could have a mustache, but you couldn't have a beard.
Hmm.
And your sideburns you could have, but only to the middle of your ear.
Hmm.
And the top of your head had to be, your hair had to be under 3 inches.
Did they actually, like, measure?
They never measured it, but that was, like, the rule.
Hmm.
And I to this day, I don't know why mustaches are okay. I mean, I understand why you wouldn't have a long beard as a police officer, because you could get injured. If someone was attacking you, they could pull your beard, and that wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
That's the reason why police officers wear clip-on ties.
Those are clip-ons?
Yeah.
Oh.
For that, huh. You know, because it's a hazard. If someone grabs you by the tie, you wouldn't want it to...
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, police for 3 years, as an intern, I would take all the non-emergency calls and stuff. Mustache. As soon as I left there, I started growing my beard out, but I kept it trim. I would say it was a business beard, like under 1 inch. And then in 2012, I got a role in a civic theater production of Fiddler on the Roof. And for that role, they said, okay, don't shave. We want you to have big beards for this. And that's when I stopped shaving. So November of 2012. Ever since November of 2012, I've been participating in No Shave Novembers since then.
Oh, it's been a permanent...
Yeah.
All right. Does your beard grant you any magical abilities?
Hmm. I competed in the Grand Rapids Stash Bash competition. I think that was in 2013, and I won Best in Show.
Oh, nice.
So... It wins me things. I do a magic routine now as part of my juggling/magic act, where I produce items from my beard. I don't know if you've ever seen that routine, but I'll produce scarves, and I'll pull some Doritos out of my beard, and then I'll pull a whole bag of Doritos out of my beard, and then I'll pull a dove out of my beard. So definitely magical. And I've been working on kind of in more so in my mind than in reality, a cut and restore beard routine. You know, you've seen like saw the person in half and put them back together. I want to do that with my beard.
Huh.
And I guess, I don't know, I don't want to give away, you know, magic secrets.
Sure.
But, I mean, you can imagine that you might need a large amount of similar looking facial hair to pull that trick off. And for a long time, I was collecting my own beard hairs that would fall out naturally, kind of in a pile on our bathroom sink, much to the dismay of my wife.
Mm.
And then she made me throw them away. She made me throw them all out.
Oh, no.
But so I got to figure out a way to do this trick. It's going to happen someday.
You could pull a Prestige and get a twin brother identical.
That's a good idea.
Sorry if that was a spoiler for anyone.
I've actually been told when I don't have facial hair that I kind of look like Ed Norton. So if you're listening, Ed, call me.
He's one of my favorite actors. He seems to have a lot of passion for the work that he does. Like, selectively taking roles and, like, really getting into it.
Yeah. Did he play the Incredible Hulk?
He did. In between Eric Bana's disaster and the current Avengers iteration.
Yeah.
He had kind of like a, I don't know if it's like a one-off for, he did his own.
Yeah. Thought that was an interesting role for him.
Yeah.
I don't picture him being like that mean to get green, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't really get angry.
No, he's pretty chill.
Like in Fight Club, he never really got upset.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Tell me about your passions. And I have juggling, clowning, puppetry, music, dancing.
Yeah.
Just broadly.
Yeah, I guess I kind of collect hobbies, in a sense. When something is interesting to me, I like to learn about it and achieve some level of mastery before moving on to the next one. And, you know, if I'm good at it, it'll stay in my repertoire. If I'm not, I'll move on. Some of the recent ones have been, my wife and I have been doing some hip hop dance classes, and it's very physically demanding. So my back was hurting me for a couple of weeks. So we've kind of been taking it easy on that.
What is hip hop style dancing? Is that sort of like what you would see in a music video where it's choreographed and?
Yeah. Choreographed stuff. Yeah. Pop and lock, a little bit of dubstep robot things.
Did you whip in Nay Nay?
Not in those classes, but I've done that before. And I recently, have you heard of dabbing?
Like marijuana dabbing or
no,
the dance dabbing?
The dance. Or I think it's a dance. It's this.
That's not a Superman?
Is it also called a Superman?
I don't know.
I mean, essentially you cover your eyes with one arm and you put your other arm up, and that's apparently called a dab.
Like, do you leave your eyes open?
Well, that's a good question, because whenever I've seen someone do it, I think they cover their eyes, and so I don't know if they're open or closed.
Huh.
But yeah, that's dabbing. And I was talking to someone about it recently, and they said, oh yeah, that's like a year old. So apparently I'm behind on my dance terms. So yeah, dance is one of my passions. I've always wanted to do falconry.
Like hunting with a falcon.
Yeah. So I looked up, there's actually falconers in the area, and I set up a meeting, and I spent a day with a guy who owns he takes care of a red-tailed hawk.
A wild one?
Yeah. So through the DNR, you can get approved to, you know, you don't own the falcons, but like you have a license to keep falcons. and you have to do an apprenticeship with a master falconer for a number of years before you can do this yourself.
So it's developing a relationship with a wild bird, like you're not raising
one? Yeah, right. Huh. Yeah, he showed me how they catch them, which is kind of cool. They have a little mesh device that has a number of like fishing line snares coming off of it, and they put a mouse under this mesh ball, or half of like a dome, a mesh dome piece with a mouse under it. Then the hawk will come and land on it. Its foot will get snared. And then they said, have your friend throw the towel over it, because if it sees you throw the towel over it, it'll associate you with its capture. And then you spend a lot of time with it until it, you know, gets comfortable with you. I mean, now that I'm saying it out loud, it kind of sounds like an abduction.
You have to induce a Stockholm syndrome.
A little bit. But apparently falcons that have been kept like this and trained with a master falconer, when they're ultimately released back into the wild, do better once they're released, because you're essentially training them how to hunt. So they're I guess more successful creatures after you've worked with them for a number of years.
Probably the other falcons are like, oh man, you're hanging out with humans, that's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, they get really cool uniforms, like they get leather dangles on their feet and like awesome hats. So
they're like the Nickelback of the bird world.
I'm not even kidding. I saw there are falcon accessories that you can get. You can get, what do they call those on your car? Ground effects? Are they lights?
Like the neon lights?
Yeah, you can get ground effects for your falcon.
Oh.
So you can see it at night.
Wow. Huh. Can you get it like little bowler hats or anything?
I'm sure.
Probably ruins the aerodynamics.
Yeah. So I spent about a day with that guy learning everything I could about falconry. I actually bought a falconer's glove because why not?
Yeah, that's a good accessory to have just in case.
So that's, it's not for me right now because it takes maybe 2 to 3 hours every day of working with your bird, which I don't have at the moment, but I could see that being something I could do in retirement.
Yeah.
I'm not really interested in the hunting aspect, more of just being friends with a bird.
Having a relationship with a wild animal. I've always thought it would be kind of cool to have like a flock of crows.
Yeah.
Because they're very intelligent birds and they remember people that they interact with. So yeah.
That'd be cool.
Maybe like try feeding a... What is it, a murder of crows?
A murder of crows, yeah.
Feeding a murder with, I think, peanuts in the shell are supposed to be good because they make the noise.
Oh, they
like
can
the
hear
peanuts
it.
Rattling around.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah, they just like follow you around when you're walking around town and protect you. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, this is a dumb question, but do you watch Naruto, the cartoon?
I haven't.
Okay, there's a character on there that can turn himself into a flock of crows.
Oh.
Or ravens.
Ravens. Yeah. There you go.
Itachi.
How do you tell the difference between a crow and a raven? Ravens are bigger, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
We
gotta look that up.
You have to write that down. Crows or ravens.
Are those synonyms? Are they the same? Or are they different?
I don't know.
Have you seen The Jungle Book?
The new one? The old one?
The old one.
Both. I've seen both.
They have the singing crows or ravens. Or no, they're vultures. I'm getting my birds mixed up right now. They do like the barbershop thing at the end.
Oh, yeah.
We're your friend. I think they're vultures, though.
Like jerky vultures?
Yeah. Birds of prey.
Ugly ones.
Yeah.
Well,
it's an eye of the beholder.
Yeah. Who am I to judge bird appearances. I've never seen you repeat a performance before. Are all of your individual performances one-offs, or do you just do them at different venues?
Yeah, at different venues. Yeah, I like to use Calm as the testing ground for the idea, and then from there, take it somewhere else. I know Calm is kind of a community of people, and oftentimes there are repeat customers, so I like to show something different when I can.
Where else do you perform around town?
To be honest, almost everything I do is at the Dog Story Theater for improv. But with juggling stuff, I'm performing anywhere that I get hired. So I do between 60 and 100 shows a year.
Oh, wow.
With some kind of circus juggling vaudeville performance.
Are they mostly private shows then?
A lot of them, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. But yeah, I think I've been from Buffalo, New York to Reno, Nevada, and everywhere in between. And I did a little bit of street performing in Paris and Rome.
Oh, wow. That'd be interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you do like art prize performances?
Not official for Art Prize, but I have definitely gone down and done street performing during that. Last year was the first year that I actually entered a piece, a juggling performance piece into Art Prize with my friend Ben Christensen. But we couldn't find a venue that would host us. We wanted to essentially make a room out of white paper and juggle props that were dipped in paint, essentially creating a sort of a Jackson Pollock effect from our juggling performance. But there was no venue that wanted to host jugglers in paint.
That'd be interesting to see. And then at the end, you have all the like the resulting walls and
right.
floor.
Ceiling and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you throw the objects against the walls, then it's not just spiders.
Yeah.
Huh.
The vision was really cool, but yeah. We just couldn't find a place to do it.
That'll give up a whole room for our prize.
Right.
Maybe next year.
We'll see, yeah.
Right. Tell me about metal detecting.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine that I worked with at Rubbermaid, Corey Barnes, he does metal detecting, and it just sounded very exciting to me to find treasure. I mean, I have a beard, and one of the characters that I sometimes perform as is a pirate. So naturally, treasure is in my blood. There's a metal detecting store about halfway between here and Kalamazoo, and they only sell metal detectors. I don't remember the name, but I'm sure if you look it up online, you'd be able to find it. Really interesting store. So I bought a metal detector, and I've been metal detecting ever since. A little bit of a hiatus here in the winter because the ground is a little hard. But my goal is to at least pay off the metal detector with what I found.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I probably found about $5 or $6 in coins.
What's the most interesting thing that you found?
There's a park in Grand Rapids, I'm not going to say where, because I don't want to give away my spot, that at one point was a training ground during World War II and Vietnam.
Okay.
And I found lots of bullets and spent ordnance, slugs, various bits of vintage military stuff. So that's been cool. It's exciting to go there because you know you're going to find something. Most of metal detecting is just, you know, sweeping your metal detector over the ground like an idiot.
You ever go to like the beach at Lake Michigan? Or...
Yeah, there are a couple beaches that allow it. Not every place allows it.
Huh. I wonder why they would not allow it. They want all that stuff for themselves.
I don't... Well, I understand some of the spaces don't allow it because of, like, precious Indian sites. Like, they don't want you...
Digging around.
Yeah. So I get that. Yeah, I don't want to, you know, risk a ticket or something worse for a dime. But yeah, definitely comb the beaches that I've been able to comb. And probably the most common item are tent spikes that people leave. But yeah, quarters are very exciting. And then bottle caps are ample. Lots of bottle caps. Mm. And I'll find, like, pop cans buried sometimes several feet underground. And that's always disappointing.
Oh.
To find, you know, to dig that deep in the sand and just find a can of Coke.
10 cents.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about it that way. I'm from Illinois. We didn't get that much for our cans.
Yeah, Michigan's a gold mine.
Yeah.
All right, final question for the interview portion. If you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
That's a good question. I think maybe something along the lines of, you'll be appreciated someday for what you do. Because I feel like it wasn't until I was older, like maybe 18 and older, where my performing stuff was appreciated and not seen as me just being a dork. Yeah.
All right, thank you. I haven't had time yet to set up a musical transition into the break.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wouldn't mind doing some sort of musical, whatever you're feeling, and then ring the bell once you're done, then...
Oh boy. I haven't started yet. I'm just trying to find the right implements. Oh, I got a fun thing recently.
Ooh, what is that?
These are bird calls. Let's see if I can do one.
Each one's a different type of bird?
These are all the same. You had to buy them in a 5-pack.
Oh, sure.
So they're made out of paper, so you have to get them wet before they'll work.
Fantastic, thank you.